today is Sarah Howe versus Albemarle County Department of Social Services. Mr. Graham, you're here, and Mr. Deloria, and Ms. Canyon?
Yes.
Okay. Just for purposes of management, have you all decided how you're going to divide your time?
Your Honor, we have, and we've directed the clerk seven and a half minutes between the two of us.
Great. Thank you. We'll hold you to that half minute. Okay. Counsel, we're in here.
Good morning, and may it please the court.
Good morning.
My name is Christopher Graham. I'm with Eustace and Graham out of Charlottesville, and I represent Ms. Sarah Howe, who is the mother of her two-year-old son, Mason. I believe he'll turn three this March. This is a termination of parental rights case, which procedurally, I'll be honest with you, Your Honor, the court here, it's a little difficult to follow the statutes in this and the bouncing ball from one statute to the other, because we've got two issues on appeal. The first is whether or not there was a preponderance, the evidence showed by preponderance of evidence that it was in this child's best interest to have the foster care goal changed from return home to adoption. And the second issue is whether or not, and this is also along the lines of the best interest, but the standard is whether by clear and convincing evidence there was sufficient evidence to show that Mrs. Howe, the child's mother, had not substantially remedied the circumstances that brought the child into foster care in the first place. And I contend that the evidence showed, first of all, that it was not in the child's best interest to change the goal from return home to adoption. And furthermore, that it was not, that the evidence had shown that Ms. Howe had substantially remedied the circumstances that brought the child in care, which was drug addiction. It was straight up drug addiction. It was not mental health issues. Well, actually, there was a mental health issue involved as well. There was dual diagnosis on that. With any drug addiction, and the General Assembly has recognized this, and that the statute allows for 6 months of additional time. I'm assuming the court is aware that from the date a child is placed in foster care, there's generally a one-year window of opportunity for a parent to have that, to convince the court to place that child back with the parent. If the parent has shown substantial progress toward that goal of return home, there is an additional 6 months granted. And that's what we were asking the juvenile court to do, and then later the trial court, the circuit court, to give us that extra 6 months.
Well, can I ask you there, Mr. Graham?
Yes.
Where was evidence of substantial compliance because of her apparently never successfully completing a drug rehab program, right?
Judge Beals, this is the difficulty with drug addiction, because she would do very well and then relapse, but she never gave up, and that's one of the contentions here that she had.
But she made substantial progress. Wouldn't take a drug test on the day of the determination in court, right?
Your Honor, that's. I'm going to have to leave that to Mr. Dewari and Ms. Kane. I feel a little reluctant to start discussing evidence that was not favorable to her, because there's plenty. There was not only that one drug test, there were other drug tests that she missed. There were hearings in January and then March of 2015. In March of 2015, the judge rejected the goal of adoption, ordered the goal to be returned home, and then continued the termination of parental rights until April 7th. Between March 10th and April 7th of 2015, it was alleged that Ms. Howe did not comply with the court's March order of 2015. And she did miss some drug tests in there. But there was also efforts made to stay clean, and that she was not without direction and help in continuing to remedy the drug addiction that brought this child into foster care. But it certainly was not a perfect record, Judge.
Well, termination of parental rights is just such a drastic step to have to take. I mean, the courts recognize that. We certainly recognize that. But when this continues, we also have case law that tells us we can't leave this indefinitely for the child to just be in some sort of limbo. How do you address that?
I can't, Your Honor. I have no evidence that Ms. Howe, between March 10th of 2015, when that initial, when the judge ordered favorably for her, and less than a month later, that she had complied more with the judge's order than not. I know that she did comply with some of the aspects of that order, but not all of them. And the main one is the drug tests. And so I'm a little reluctant here in my statement because I feel like I'm making an argument for the other side, Your Honor. I can't sit here dumbfounded and just say I can't really answer that question. I don't have firsthand knowledge of that because I do. She didn't do the drug tests.
And the court also found that some of the testimony in the previous hearing that your client, that Ms. Howe had given, was misrepresentative of the truth.
That was another aspect of the April 7th, the follow-up hearing after the judge had ruled in her favor.
Counsel, we appreciate your candor.
We do.
And your difficult position.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning again. I'm Richard DeLoria, and I'm here on behalf of the Albemarle County Department of Social Services. We believe that in regards to this particular appeal, that the overriding issue is whether there is sufficient evidence for termination of parental rights. Obviously, the department feels that there is sufficient evidence, and if the court is to make that finding, then the issue of the adoption and preponderance of evidence standard that was raised on briefs kind of falls by the wayside. So I'm going to address, there's essentially three principles guiding this case. I think the first one, obviously, is a principle that this court has enunciated, and that is the past is a gauge to a person's future actions. That is, can you look at the history, as the trial court did in this case, and make a determination as to whether the parent is unlikely to remedy or unable or unwilling to remedy, and that embraces both 283B and 283C. Secondly, if the court were to find that there was some remedy, as the appellant has argued, then the question becomes: did the parent do so in a period of time that did not exceed 12 months? And the position of the department is that that didn't happen. The third issue is, Judge Beals had noted, should a child spend a lengthy period of time to find out if or when the parent will be capable of resuming parental responsibilities? I think that's a best interest analysis, and I will defer to Stephanie Kanigan, who's the guardian ad litem in that respect. So in regards to, I think, the first governing principle, one is a maxim that this court has recognized, and that is that sometimes the most reliable way to gauge a person's future actions is to examine those of his or her past, and that's the Tom's opinion noted in the brief. And if you go back and look over the record, early in the case, there was an evaluation done by Marilyn Minrath, and she diagnosed Ms. Howe as suffering from polysubstance abuse, prescription drug abuse, stimulant medication use, marijuana use, major depression, generalized anxiety disorder, non-specified personality disorder, with borderline and antisocial personality traits. In that evaluation, she concluded that she had a profound inability to take care of herself, let alone an infant. And I note that because that is something that the history of the case bore out. So in terms of looking at that, the trial court was able, based upon the number of rehabilitation programs that she entered and left or failed, and I think the most glaring one is the Galax Life Center, where she went into the dual diagnosis. It probably offered her the best chance, but she was removed from that program because she was arrested and convicted for two drunken publics. So as the history of the case went on, Dr. Minrath's diagnosis was confirmed, essentially that she's unlikely to make the changes, and that's a conclusion that the trial court was entitled to make under 283 subsection B. The other point is in terms of the timeline. The case started in July of 2013. By the time we were up in circuit court, or I'll say the permanency planning, where in juvenile court, where the first goal was changed from return home to adoption, that was a situation where she had just enrolled in or gone down to the Florida Treasure Coast. We were at, I think, 11 and a half months at that period of time. Everything that happened after that occurred after the 12-month period. I think if the case stands for anything, it's one that the court can reaffirm that parents need to start making substantial steps before that 12-month period arrives, so that there can be some assurance that there's going to be permanence for this child. But in that particular case, she had failed to remedy the conditions by the 12-month period. It's our position that even the trial judge didn't believe it, but even if the court were to believe that she had made steps in the Treasure Coast, Florida program, that occurred way too late in the game for this child. So I think in terms of that leads us up to, is it in the best interest? I think the statutory factors in terms of the services that were offered to Ms. Howe, in terms of her inability or unlikely ability to make those changes, that evidence was more than sufficient. I think in the trial court, I argued that it was beyond any doubt. So we did clear the hurdle. But that leads us up to the issue of, is it in the child's best interest? So if the panel has no questions, then I will step aside for the guardian ad litem.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Stephanie King, and I'm the guardian ad litem for MHS. I'm sorry, I keep getting, his last name was flipped in a couple of pleadings, so I have to stop and think. Your Honor, while the court did not make a specific verbal finding of this being in the best interest of the child, I think that's inherent in making its ruling. It was argued by counsel, both for the Department of Social Services and by myself, that having a termination of parental rights and a goal change to adoption would be in the best interest of the child. The court, I mean, procedurally, this was, I guess, unique is the polite way to say it, and just odd, because, you know, we had three really rapid succession cases. But I think that one of the arguments made to the trial court was there was some extrinsic fraud in terms of mom had argued that she was clean and she had, you know, successfully completed Treasure Coast, and it was just sort of play it by ear from when she came home, and but she wouldn't sign any releases for anybody to see those records. She didn't produce the records herself. Once the judge ordered her to sign the releases, and she did, everybody found out that wasn't actually the case. The judge, you know, found that in that first hearing she had not been completely honest with the court, and the other thing is that she testified that she had had no follow-up with that. And basically, it's not in the best interest of the child to wait for the parent to be compliant. And a lot of this hearing was focused on mom. You know, and mom and I, during the trial, got into a rather heated exchange, I would call it, where mom kept saying it wasn't fair. And I kept saying, wasn't fair to who? And she finally said, to me. And I'm like, that's not who we're here for. We're here about your child. The child deserves to have a stable home with a parent who can take care of him at all times and puts that child first. I mean, the issue with the drug testing was that mom couldn't produce a sample when social services tried to do a random drug screen. So literally the social worker went to the FAPT meeting, the Family Assessment Partnership team, said, can we get funding for a blood draw, and got it. And by the time mom came back to social services, was sent to the hospital, mom didn't go because she didn't like needles. That's not putting your child first and considering the best interest of the child. If you want to prove that you are clean and sober and are doing what's necessary for your child, then you go, you get the test, and you put your kid first. You don't say, I don't like needles. So the you know, and the judge actually made a mention of that you don't have to like what you're being asked to do, you just need to do it. And that's something that, as a guardian ad litem and also as a parents counsel, I tell, you know, parents all the time that, you know, once the adjudication's done, we're not fighting with DSS anymore, we're cooperating, which is a little bit of a shift, and I understand that. But, you know, you need to do what you're asked to do to fight for your kids. Mom basically took the fight to DSS the entire time, to the point where she said, well, I don't trust DSS and I'm not going to work with them, even if I do get 6 more months. and how that can't be in the best interest of your child to flat out say that I'm not going to work with them anymore because during these next 6 months to prove, you know, to make that substantial progress. Children can't wait, especially babies. We're talking a child who was removed at a little over 4 months of age. He's going to turn 3 in about 6 weeks. He has basically, you know, spent the last 32 months, if my math is correct, in foster care, the majority of it with the same family. It's in his best interest to terminate on mom. Dad has already been terminated so that they can proceed with finalizing things and getting him permanency. That's what the goal is. You know, it's in his best interest. And you know, I realize this is a drastic option, but when, you know, DSS looks to family first, and when they don't have family stepping forward that's appropriate, then they need to look at, you know, can this child go back?
In this case, the maternal grandmother was an option at one point?
She had been an option in terms of she had filed a petition for custody. Also, Dad's brother and his girlfriend had filed petitions for custody. They were evaluated. The maternal grandmother actually withdrew her petition for custody during the circuit court hearing and wanted to proceed only on visitation. The paternal uncle's petition for custody was denied. So, and basically, there was evidence at the hearing that they had looked at, you know, they kept repeatedly asking for people who would, you know, could be considered, and there just weren't that many produced, and some of the ones who were produced were not.
And maternal grandmother realized that if parental rights are terminated, she will have no ability to exercise any visitation, I suppose.
I would assume that she was represented by counsel the entire circuit court proceeding, so I would assume that she knows that that's.
I ask, just follow up on what the points you're making, because this is such a drastic step.
It is, and you know, it certainly. I think that maternal grandmother could work with the family. There was testimony that the maternal grandfather actually does have a good relationship with the foster family, who's the potential adoptive family, and he actually does see the child in sort of a grandparent. He and his wife, the step grandmother, see the child in sort of a grandparent role, I think that there needs to be some, you know, the facts of this case, there needs to be some trust rebuilt with before any of that could happen for the maternal grandmother. So it's not, you know, it is a drastic option, but, you know, it's still in the best interest of the child that he have the stability of the family where he is now, his potential adoptive family, versus mom, who, you know, has had many times, many, many opportunities to remedy things and just has not been able to do so. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Graham, I neglected to ask you if you wanted a rebuttal time, but you've got plenty, so if you'd like to take a minute, feel free. If not, we're...
Judge Decker, I think you properly surmised my position earlier. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, counsel. We'll be down to...